Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
They say justice is blind, but in Lector County, Kentucky, it was shot dead in cold blood. September 19th of 2024 is what we're talking about, a Thursday morning like any other. Until it wasn't, inside the Lector County Courthouse. What happened? Judge Kevin Mullen sat behind his desk going about his usual routine just before 10 a.m. Sheriff Sean Mickey Steins walked into his chambers and changed the course of history. Without warning, he pulled out a handgun and fired. The first shot was enough to put Mullins down. The next few were just to make sure. Surveillance cameras caught it all, no sound, just the cold, clinical footage of a man executing a sitting judge. And here's where things get strange. After making absolutely sure the judge was dead, Steins didn't flee. He didn't fight. He calmly walked to the nearest deputy, handed over his gun, and surrendered without a struggle, almost like he had just checked off an errand on his to-do list. Up this morning, take the dogs out, drive the kids to school, shoot the judge, get arrested, spend my life in prison. The courthouse went into lockdown. People were screaming. Staff barricaded themselves in offices. Within minutes, law enforcement flooded the scene, not as Steins' backup, but to take their own sheriff into custody. Imagine the confusion in that building. When the man that you're hunting down, the man that you otherwise would be going to for help in a situation just like this, is the one causing the chaos. And just like that, the man elected to uphold the law became the county's most infamous murder suspect. He was initially charged with first-degree murder. The prosecution wasted absolutely no time on that, pushing for no bond, and the judge agreed. Steins, he wasn't going anywhere. There was no excuse that was going to come out that was going to make that change. He entered an initial plea of not guilty, setting the stage for one of the most bizarre legal battles in Kentucky ever. Because here's the thing. This wasn't just any murder. This was a sheriff killing a judge inside the courthouse, the place where law is supposed to reign supreme. You don't get much more high profile than that. And yet, from the moment Sheriff Steins turned himself in, one question lingered in the air. Why? Why did the sheriff shoot the judge? What is going on here? They were friends. That one time, they were actually family, like by in-law. It didn't take long for his attorney, Jeremy Bartley, to offer up a theory. Steins wasn't in his right mind. Okay, but why? At first, the defense hinted at an extreme emotional disturbance. The idea was that Steins had snapped in the moment. Something had pushed him over the edge. But as the weeks went on, Bartley changed tactics. This wasn't just about a bad temper or overwhelming stress. This was full-blown insanity. That's where we're at now. Enter California encephalitis, a rare neurological condition that Stein's legal team claims affected his brain function under extreme stress. Sounds like a mouthful, right? Basically, it's a viral brain infection that may cause confusion, memory issues, and in rare cases, aggression. It's a kind of thing that, if severe enough, could make someone lose control. That's the argument. But convincing a jury that Steins didn't know what he was doing, that's an entirely different battle. See, Kentucky's insanity defense law isn't easy to navigate. It follows a version of the McNaughton rule, which means Steins has to prove that at the time of the murder, he either, one, didn't understand what he was doing, or two, couldn't tell right from wrong. That's a high bar to clear. And juries don't like letting accused murderers off the hook. They're not good at that. In Kentucky, insanity defenses are about as rare as a unicorn sighting. Most people don't buy it, and they don't attempt it either. That's where the psychiatric experts come in. The defense will need professionals to argue that Steins was mentally incapacitated when he pulled the trigger. And you better believe the prosecution will have their own experts, too, ones who will say he was fully aware and acted with intent. Because here's something to think about. If Steins was truly out of his mind, why did he calmly surrender? Why not flee? Why not resist? Those are the kind of questions that the prosecution is going to be hammering home. And the stakes, they're huge. If the insanity defense works, Steins won't be sent to prison. Instead, he'll be committed to a secure psychiatric facility where he'd remain until doctors decide he's no longer a danger. That could mean life in a mental hospital, or it could mean an eventual release. If it fails, he's looking at a straight-up murder conviction, which in Kentucky means life in prison, possibly without parole, or worse, the death penalty if the prosecution chooses to seek it. So yeah, the case, it is just getting started. Now here's where things get even messier, because it's not as black and white as what we just talked about. You're thinking, why would a respected sheriff suddenly decide to execute a judge? It's a good question. Well, there is more to the story. A lot more to the story. 3 days before the shooting, Sean Steins sat for a deposition in a federal lawsuit. A lawsuit that tied directly back to Judge Kevin Mullins. This wasn't just any lawsuit. It was one that exposed a sex scandal inside Mullins' own courthouse. Kind of big stuff. If you're wondering how that fits into all of this, buckle up, because that's a whole different level of corruption that we may be talking about here. Kevin Mullins was the kind of judge who made you wonder whether the courtroom was a place of justice or just another extension of a small town political boys club. For years, he had been a fixture in Lector County, wearing a black robe like a man who believed he owned the law rather than served it. His career followed the classic Appalachian power playbook. Local boy rises through the ranks, makes the right friends, wins the election, and suddenly he's the one calling the shots. Mullins had been on the bench long enough to build influence, but not long enough to be completely untouchable. On the surface, he played the role well, polished, respected. The kind of judge who knew everyone in town by name, who shook hands at football games, who could chat it up in a room full of lawyers and coal miners with equal ease. But just beneath that thin layer of professionalism, that's where the real story lived, allegedly. In a county where political alliances mean everything, Mullins had built his share of them. He was close with law enforcement, especially Sheriff Steins. The two had worked side by side for years, running the courthouse like their own little kingdom. If Mullins made a ruling that benefited Stein's department, nobody batted an eye. If Stein's deputies gave Mullins courtroom extra attention, nobody questioned it. It was just how things are done. That's what we do here. And people knew better than to cross him. Mullins wasn't the kind of judge you wanted to challenge. If you were a lawyer, your cases might suddenly start going sideways. If you were a defendant, your sentence might get a little longer than expected. There were rumors. There are always rumors. But in Lecter County, what mattered wasn't whether they were true. It was whether you were willing to risk finding out. But in 2022, the cracks started to show. That was the year a federal lawsuit landed on Mullins' doorstep, one that threatened to pull back the curtain on his courtroom. And what it alleged was nothing short of a nuclear bomb. The lawsuit told a story that sounded more like something out of a crime show than real life. A female defendant caught up in a house arrest sentence claimed she had been sexually coerced inside Mullins' own chambers, not by the judge himself, but by a deputy working under his authority. Her testimony painted a grim picture. According to her, the deputy, who also served as Mullins' bailiff, made it clear that her freedom depended on one thing: her willingness to trade sex for special treatment. If she complied, she stayed out of jail. If she refused, she risked being thrown back behind bars on a technicality. And it wasn't just her. Another woman came forward with a similar story, claiming she had been manipulated into sexual favors in exchange for leniency. Both described the courthouse system that wasn't just broken, it was actively working against vulnerable people trapped inside it. And where was Mullins in all of this? That's the million-dollar question. The lawsuit didn't directly accuse the judge of participating in the abuse, but it didn't clear him either. It claimed that this was happening inside his own chambers, a place where he held absolute control. The victim said the deputy operated freely because he knew nobody was watching. No security cameras, no oversight, just the assumption that the powerful didn't get questioned. For his part, Mullins never publicly addressed the allegations before his death. But legally speaking, silence isn't the same as innocence. And the lawsuit didn't just go after the bailiff. It went after Sheriff Steins himself. According to the case, Steins either knew about the abuse and ignored it, or he was so incompetent that he let it happen right under his nose. Either way, it meant one thing: he was just as responsible. The lawsuit argued that Steins failed to properly train or supervise his deputies, creating an environment where coercion and abuse could thrive. It was a damning accusation, and it put both men, Mullins and Steins, under a microscope. But legal cases move slowly. And in small-town politics, the goal is always to outlast the scandal. You can survive the headlines, people will move on. Something else will come up to gate their attention. That might have been the plan. But then, in September of 24, the deposition happened. 3 days before the shooting, Stein sat down for questioning in the lawsuit, and for several hours he had to answer for everything. We know exactly what was said. The transcript hasn't been made public, but what we do know is that whatever came up in that room, it was enough to shake the sheriff. Because that deposition, that was the first time Stein's had to go on the record about the corruption allegations tied to his office. The first time he was forced to face details, the victims, the accusers, the choices that led him to that seat. And more importantly, it might have been the first time he had to speak about Mullins' role in all of it. Did Steins implicate the judge? Did he throw him under the bus to protect himself? Did he say something that he knew he couldn't take back? Those are the questions that loom over this case, because just 3 days later, Steins walked into Mullins' chambers and shot him dead. That's what makes this whole thing much bigger than a murder. It's not just about a sheriff losing control. It's about why he lost control. And the closer you look at that deposition, the more it starts to feel like a turning point. Maybe it was the moment. when Stein realized he was going down. Or maybe, just maybe, it was the moment he decided he wasn't going down alone. The legal system in Kentucky was never designed to handle a case like this. A sitting sheriff walks into a courthouse, guns down a judge, and now that same system, the one both men once controlled, is responsible for deciding what happens next? The conflict of interest are obvious from day one, but what are they going to do? Well, that's why the local judicial system had to step aside almost immediately. A special judge from outside the region has been assigned to oversee the trial, along with a special appointed circuit clerk. Every move is being scrutinized because nobody wants this case to be thrown out on a technicality. The last thing the state wants is an appeal based on claims that Steins didn't get a fair trial. But let's be real, what does a fair trial even look like in a case like this? Finding an impartial jury? Well, that's going to be a nightmare. This isn't just another crime story. It's Letcher County history. People here knew Judge Mullins. They knew Sheriff Steins. Some worked with them. Some owed them favors. Others had grudges. That alone makes it almost impossible to seat a jury that isn't walking in with some kind of bias. There's already talk of a change of venue, which means the trial could be moved to a different county to find jurors who weren't living under the weight of Mullins and Stein's political influence. But even then, the case has made national headlines. Any juror in Kentucky has likely already heard some version of the story. The real question is whether they can find 12 people who are willing to listen to the evidence instead of the rumors. And that's not the only hurdle here, because Stein's legal team is about to take a massive gamble. They want Mullins' alleged past dragged into the courtroom. Stein's defense is preparing to argue that Mullins' connection to the courthouse sex scandal is directly relevant to why the murder happened. They want the jury to hear about the alleged abuse in his chambers, the lawsuit, the victims, the coercion, all of it. Their argument? That Steins, well, he was mentally unraveling under the weight of the deposition, and that Mullins wasn't just a victim. He was part of a larger corrupt system that had finally come crashing down on itself. Maybe he's the hero in this. Maybe this is vigilante justice. He took out a predator. Maybe. He still can't do that. The prosecution, on the other hand, is going to fight that with everything they have, because here's the reality. A murder trial isn't supposed to be about the victim's reputation, legally speaking. Whether Mullins was involved in the scandal or not does not change what happened on September 19th of 2024. Steins walked into the chambers, pulled the gun, fired multiple rounds. The judge will have to decide whether evidence about Mullins' misconduct is relevant or it's just a distraction. If they allow it, the trial could turn into a referendum on the courthouse corruption instead of a straight murder case. If they block it, the defense will argue that Stein's side of the story is being suppressed. Either way, it's going to be a legal fight that could shape the entire direction of the trial. And hanging all over this whole mess, the death penalty. So far, prosecutors haven't said whether they're going to seek it. It's not an automatic decision. Seeking the death penalty means a longer, more expensive trial and an extra phase of sentencing. And a jury has to be death qualified, which means anyone who is morally opposed to the death penalty is automatically excluded. So if you want to get out of jury duty and you know it's a death penalty case, just say that. Or that you listen to a lot of true crime. That kind of jury tends to favor the prosecution, which might be exactly why they might decide to go for it. But there's also politics involved. If they don't seek the death penalty, some in the community will see it as a weak move, like the system protecting its own. If they do go down it, it turns Steins into something bigger than just a defendant. He's become a man fighting for his life. Juries tend to hesitate when the ultimate punishment is on the table. The decision here will shape everything about how this trial plays out. The insanity defense is already a long shot, and if it fails, Stein's legal team is going to need backup plans. Because pleading not guilty, is not going to cut it, especially when you're on camera doing it. One plausible fallback, diminished capacity. This isn't quite the same as insanity. It's more like arguing that Steins wasn't thinking clearly when he pulled the trigger. But he wasn't legally insane either. The goal here would be to push for a lesser charge, like manslaughter instead of murder. And if the defense can convince a jury that Steins acted under extreme emotional disturbance, the punishment could be reduced significantly. But let's be honest. The prosecution isn't going to let that argument slide without a fight. They're going to paint Steins as a calculated killer, a man who knew exactly what he was doing and had a reason for doing it. Their argument is straightforward. If Steins truly snapped, why did he bring a gun into the courthouse? Well, because he's the sheriff. Why did he immediately surrender instead of running or resisting? And that looks a lot more like a planned execution than a temporary mental breakdown. That's exactly what the jury is going to have to decide. If the insanity plea doesn't work, the jury doesn't buy the diminished capacity argument, Steins is looking at the full weight of a murder conviction. That could mean life without parole, or if prosecutors do go for it, a death sentence. There's also the possibility of a plea deal, but don't expect Steins to take one unless the offer is significantly better than the risk of trial. Given the brutality of the crime and the public outrage, prosecutors aren't likely to offer much leniency. The reality is this case is going to trial, and it's going to be one hell of a fight. But this isn't just about Steins anymore, because when you take a step back, this case isn't just about one murder. It's about an entire system that let this happen. For years, Mullins and Steins ran the courthouse like their own personal empire. The power structure in Lecter County, it protected them, insulated them, let them away, get away with things that, you know, should have raised some alarms a long time ago. When that system finally started to collapse, it collapsed in the most violent way possible. And the real question is, what else is going to come out before this trial is over? Because if this case exposes more corruption, more abuses, more unchecked power, this might not just be about the judge and one sheriff. This might just be about the beginning of a much, much bigger case against many, many officials in that county. There's a lot more to this. A lot more people know more about this. More have been affected by it that have not yet had their voice heard, or for legal reasons, have not had their voice heard. But they will be, and the truth will eventually come out. What that truth is the biggest question of all. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss our coverage on this case. We are watching it very closely, and as anything breaks, you will hear it right here on the podcast or on our YouTube channel. Press subscribe on either so you don't miss any updates. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. You just made it through an episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Congrats on surviving the ads. Want to skip them completely next time?
What is that?
Join the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel on Apple Podcasts. Ad-free episodes, exclusive early access, and no interruptions. Just pure crime storytelling. Try it free for 3 days. Don't wait.
Bitchin' stuff, dude.
Hit subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and get ahead of the mystery.
You know what I'm saying? Come on.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.